November 28, 1954, Caracas, Venezuela. Two men are driving on a dark road at night, when suddenly their progress is halted by the appearance of a large vehicle, or craft, roughly 10 feet in diameter, blocking the road. They come to a stop. Naturally curious, they emerge from the car in an attempt to investigate. This is a familiar narrative. An isolated place, a strange object, and only one to a few witnesses to corroborate the story. This would be an interesting, albeit rather cliche, UFO encounter story, were it not for what happened next. Join us tonight as we investigate the strange and apparently invincible Caracas Dwarves, also known as the Hairy Attacker. That's today on Hey Strangeness. Thank you for listening to Hey Strangeness. When you're finished with today's episode, you might enjoy checking out our other podcast, Strange Conversations. Strange Conversations was started because I wanted a way to casually interview creators in the paranormal space whose work I admire. The interviews air live on Instagram and are later uploaded to YouTube and Spotify. Check out this one-minute excerpt from our recent interview with Seth Breedlove of Small Town Monsters, and be sure to follow Hey Strangeness on Instagram for future episodes.
Our schedule last year was insane because everything got compressed down to this period of time from essentially from like April through October, where all of our movies made last year had to be edited over that time period. And so I did Journey, Dark Sky, Skinwalker, Discovery, all four movies in the span of like 5 months, 6 months.
That's insane.
And I was totally, by the time I got to the Skinwalker part of that, I was totally burned out. By the time I got into editing Discovery, I was coming back around and I got my in again, you know, to everything. So what we're doing now, what we're trying to do now to keep me from reaching that point is to shoot a movie and then immediately be editing it. So rather than shoot too far out in advance, we're shooting something and then editing it pretty much immediately. And I find that that's working so far.
Thank you for tuning in to Hey Strangeness. My name is Aaron.
I'm Sarah.
And it's been a little while.
It has.
Kind of took a break from the show for a little bit.
Yeah, I needed it.
Yeah, focusing on some life stuff. Good stuff, but...
Oh yeah, great stuff.
Just not the show. But we're very excited to be back. We've got a super cool topic to get into tonight. And I'm surprised that this one doesn't come up more often. I feel like we're doing a service by presenting this case to the world at large.
Okay.
And I think we should be praised for that.
Okay.
Okay. So we have a really cool story out of Caracas, Venezuela, from the year 1954, the month of November, 1954. Interestingly enough, the same month and year that the original Godzilla movie premiered in Japanese movie theaters.
I'm so happy for you that you get to drop this tidbit. I know you were waiting.
I really was. It was the first thing I put in my notes.
I'm not surprised.
But the incident was reported again out of Caracas, Venezuela. Or really, there was a series of incidents. There's more than one encounter here, which for some reason seems to be largely forgotten by much of the paranormal alien UFO cryptid community. And that's a sad thing. So we're gonna rectify that tonight. I ran across this encounter in a book I recently picked up called Faces of the Visitors. It's basically a case file of different alleged extraterrestrial reports and incidences, focusing specifically on the aliens themselves, not so much the UFOs or the spacecraft.
Okay.
It's kind of interesting, yeah. And it's broken into like, you know, sightings, more extreme encounters, and then actual abductees. This book was co-authored by Kevin D. Randall, who also wrote UFO Crash at Roswell in 1991. A little bit of trivia for our book nerds. But I like Faces of the Visitors because it actually lists out the sources that the information's coming from, different books and articles and newspaper clippings. And it's from 1997, so it's not a bunch of links, you know.
Yeah.
There weren't any links. So there's a series of encounters with this creature, but I think before we go through those, we should describe it first to have a good image in our minds. So we're talking about something that's maybe 2 to 3 feet tall, maybe a little taller, covered in fur, looks like an ape or a bear kind of in appearance, has retractable claws.
Like Wolverine?
I don't know.
Or Lady Deathstrike?
I don't know. One of those, presumably.
Okay.
But they're sharp.
Were they made of adamantium?
Yeah, that's.
I was gonna say vibranium, and then I was like, "Wait, no, that's Captain America."
Yeah, that's the shield and some other stuff. And I think
the arm.
The arm. Oh yeah, yeah.
Did I say it right though? Adamantium.
Adamantium. Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
I don't know what the claws were made of. Something durable. Something very durable. The length also isn't specified, but they were sharp and they were retractable. The creatures also had no nose, no mouth, and no ears, but large visible eyes. So I'm kind of thinking like Ewoks that only have eyes.
I was
going
to say Ewoks with like a ski mask.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's kind of what the illustration in Faces of the Visitors looks like too.
Okay.
Yeah. Little Ewok guys. And when they were stabbed.
Stabbed? Like people tried to stab them?
Yes. One person... I believe Mr. Gonzalez tried to stab one of them.
Cool. Okay.
In the encounter story we're going to get into shortly. But when the creature was stabbed, the knife bounced off of it, you know, and made like a metal sound. So it's like they were armored with something.
So it was like Wolverine. So they like their skin was like protected, or not skin, their fur.
I guess they were like little Wolverines. Yeah. But with their bones... their indestructible bones on the outside.
Well, that's like, well, what's Wolverine's brother?
Sabretooth?
No. Remember in Wolverine Origins, the brother has the skeleton that comes out?
Yeah, like that's supposed to be Sabretooth.
Is it really?
Yeah, the Leif Schreiber.
I just remember
character.
It was Leif Schreiber. Nuh-uh.
I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong.
Wow, he looked different from the prequel to the... Okay.
Yeah, because they don't even talk about... Like in the first X-Men movie.
They don't even talk about them being siblings.
They don't even mention it.
The only claws you... No, because the only claws you see is Sabretooth are like his like...
Maybe he wasn't supposed to be
Sabretooth. Feline claws. I'm pretty sure the brother could push bones out of his knuckles.
Yeah, he had something like... Well, no, Wolverine had the bone knuckles. And then he got metal ones later. Anyway, these guys are like little Sabretooth Wolverine deals.
Okay.
In another encounter, which we'll also get to shortly, one of them was struck with the butt of a rifle, and the rifle exploded, disintegrated, broke in little pieces.
What?
Yeah. Okay. So here, let's get into the story. Oh, also, like, jury's kind of out on what we call these things.
I kind of like Harry Attacker.
The Harry Attacker? Yeah.
Like, I think that would be a name for a little Ewok, you know, bastard.
Yeah, bastard Ewok. Let me grab the book and I can show you the illustration they've got in here. I'm pretty sure I have the page marked.
I'm realizing one of our first dates was to go see Wolverine.
Yeah, that was like the first movie we saw together.
And we don't remember the characters.
Remember the characters. But yeah, see in the book here, the artist illustration has it looking like an Ewok.
And that one has a mouth, even though you just said no mouth.
Yeah. All the other artist depictions I found online, including some from like newspaper articles from the time, show, you know, more of like an alien gray almost with fur and bigger eyes.
Okay.
But also stronger. Anyway, so this is the encounters. Okay, we got these little pseudo invincible bear men. These two guys, Gustavo Gonzalez and Jose Ponce, are driving on a road at night, and they see a UFO hovering above the ground, blocking the road, about 10 feet or so. Pretty kind of atypical UFO encounter story. We hear this a lot, you know, in contactee visitation stories of something blocking the road. So they stop and they get out and they're checking out what's going on here with this thing in the road. And there are a lot of really specific details on this case. One of the sources I found online has them all just like listed out in a really extensive bibliography. Like we know the time of day. We know the street that they were on. We know the address that they were close to.
This is from the '50s, you said?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It's really well
documented.
That's
pretty good history taking. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Which is again, one of the reasons that I find it strange that more people don't talk about this case, but we'll get to that. But anyway, these guys get out of the car to investigate, and they see this little furry humanoid creature guy, you know, hanging out. And for whatever reason, these guys decide they need to capture it and take it with them to the police, I guess, to prove that it exists.
Not something I would do, but
me
okay.
Neither, yeah. So it's a little some of the details are a little shaky. Like, I'm not entirely sure who attacked who first, but basically there's a brawl between these guys and this little hairy man, and then more of them come out of the woods. At one point, there's like five of them.
So it is like Ewoks.
Yeah, exactly.
This went off, all of a sudden there's 20.
Well, it even says here that they were carrying either logs or boulders when they came out of the woods, possibly to use as defensive weapons.
Oh, Lord.
So, wow. These guys really are Ewoks. Well, then the side of the UFO that's blocking the road opens, or already was open, and another one of the little furry guys kind of pokes his head out, and he's holding a long silver tube, which he points at one of the witnesses. Not sure if it was Mr. Gonzalez or Mr. Ponce? Ponce. Okay, yeah. Points the tube at one of them, shoots a beam of bright light, and it paralyzes him. And then apparently the rest of the little creatures on the ground jumped 2 meters or so up into the side of the waiting craft, which then took off into the sky in a blue, silvery glow. Initial thoughts on this encounter?
Ewoks. Yeah. Ewok Wolverine hybrids.
Yeah, with a spaceship.
With a spaceship.
Very cool, yeah. And on its own, this would be a weird story that would be pretty easy to write off, which, again, it seems like a lot of the community have done. But there were several other witnesses which made reports in conjunction with this account, which included the following. In the area, Miss Maria Antoinetta Avalenda, said to have been woken in the middle of the night by a great whistling, booming sound. Let's see. Concepcion Garachan, resident of Petare, indicated that hours before the two men's encounter, she had seen a strange, glowing, luminous object moving through the sky that did not make any noise. And the list goes on. People reporting very strange noises, UFO sightings, and even other creature sightings within a couple hours or right around the same time that this was taking place. And these were documented by newspapers and law enforcement at the time. So, again, compelling story by itself, but there are two more encounters with these things. And that's what really, really blows my mind about it. On the 12th of December, two men were out hunting, Jesus Gomez and Lorenzo Flores, when they also saw a strange craft hovering about 10 feet off the ground. So the first encounter is November 28th. The second is December the 12th, about 2 weeks later.
Okay.
Then suddenly four of the furry little guys, you know, same ones from before, jump out of the craft and, like, bum-rushed these guys. Like, just, again, Ewok attack. Just came straight at them. One of the men struck the creature with the butt of his rifle, which shattered into tiny little pieces. Oh, and the stabbing, I guess, took place during the previous encounter. One of those guys tried to stab it.
Again, I would not recommend trying to stab something.
Yeah.
That you have no idea or have never seen, but no.
Yeah. No. We talked about this on Strange Conversations with Sarah Snallygaster, and she said the same thing.
Yeah.
Don't stab the monsters, the cryptid guys. Yeah. So yeah, he hits him with the rifle, which in this case I kind of understand, because it seems like the little bear guys were the aggressor in this situation. Mm. Though after, you know, an attempted kidnapping with maybe the first humans they encountered, I also kind of don't blame them. You know?
They have to protect their space.
Yeah. They have to protect their little furry Ewok allies. So yeah, one of the men struck the creature with the butt of his rifle and it shattered into tiny little pieces. You can't stab these guys. You can't club them. The men managed to escape, but were treated at a local hospital for injuries consisting of cuts and bruises and long gashes. Their clothes were also reportedly torn up, just like the previous two witnesses, who were also reported to a police station and were given medical treatment at a local hospital.
Cool.
Yeah. And then there's a third encounter later in December, the date's not specified, where a man was traveling by car with some friends. They pulled over on the side of the road so he could pee in a bush. And when he was in the bush peeing, he was attacked in a similar fashion, just one of these little guys coming out of nowhere and scratching him up.
They're pissed that he was peeing on their bush.
We're abducting them. We're clubbing them with rifles and stabbing them. And
peeing on their bushes.
Peeing on their bushes. So the guy's freaking out, yelling for help. His friends get out of the car. They run, you know, over to where he's at. And they see him laying on the ground all cut up and bruised. And then, you know, more of these little guys running away into the woods. So three separate encounters all taking place within about a month of each other, independent witnesses, same geographical area. document.
I really wonder if this is where George Lucas got his ideas for, you know, Ewoks.
The
and
Ewoks?
Wicket. Right? That's the name, Wicket?
Wicket, yeah. There's Wicket, Chief Chirpa, Low Gray,
the little
Paplu.
Paplu.
Paplu's a little
Because, I mean, think about it. Like, the biggest thing that's, to me, that's scary about Ewoks is the mouths. Like, how the lips are kind of turned outward, and you see the little teeth poking out, and their eyes are just beady and black. And
have you heard the fan theory about Ewoks actually being, like, savage, evil, terribly dangerous?
I feel like I have. Well, didn't creatures? You tell me when we watched it recently, like, that they were eating humans, or like, yeah. Where did they get those clothes from? They probably ate the humans that yeah. they got it from.
Like, why did they have a dress that fit Princess Leia? Did they make it when she got there? Maybe, but based on the clothes the Ewoks were wearing, they don't seem to have super advanced textile manufacturing capabilities.
Yeah.
And then they have this really nice dress for her, you know, that's like tailor fit. The theory I've read is that they killed, murdered, and possibly ate previous humans that were stranded on Endor.
Who happened to just be the same, or who just so happened to be the same size as Princess Leia.
Yeah. And then they're playing drums on Stormtrooper helmets at the end. What if those helmets actually had heads in them? And then they were actually able to beat the Empire using sticks and rocks with guerrilla tactics on their own turf. The most technologically advanced fighting machine in the modern history of the galaxy. So, yeah, a lot of witness corroboration, a lot of reports coming in while this was going on about the UFO activity, physical altercations with the creatures, involvement by law enforcement. Does this remind you of any other cases?
It's the Kentucky Goblins. I'm Sarah.
You didn't have to say I'm Sarah. No, I'll just be like, does this remind you of any other cases?
Okay, go
like,
again.
Oh my God, the Kentucky Goblins.
Go again. Okay. Why'd you put I'm Sarah?
I don't know. Okay. Sarah, does this remind you? Sarah, does this remind you of any other cases?
Sure. It reminds me of the Kentucky Goblins.
The Kentucky Goblins.
I'm Sarah.
You are.
It reminds you of I'm Eric.
Oh, yeah. the Kentucky Goblins. That was a case where we had multiple witnesses, involvement by law enforcement,
support mm-hmm. from local.
Supporting corroboration yeah. from, yeah, like neighbors who were there at the time.
Yeah.
The Kentucky Goblins were on at least one or two occasions during the encounter shot with weapons and got back up and didn't really care.
Mm-hmm.
They also could fly, it seems, or hover or something, maybe. And there was also a UFO sighting that happened in conjunction with that. And for all of those reasons, the Kentucky Goblins are one of the more infamous cases. The Hopkinsville incident, whatever you like. At CryptidCon this year, we saw a lot of artist depictions of the Kentucky Goblins. They're all over the place, but just they're everywhere now. And it's interesting because really the Kentucky Goblins are in the same book as Faces of the Visitors. In fact, it's actually the very next case that they talk about. And the stories parallel each other really, really closely. So it's interesting to me that the Kentucky Goblins, which really fascinating case, a lot of cool stuff, but we only have really one story for those guys. Versus the hairy attacker, Atacante Peludo, there are three main encounters and then a whole bunch of corroborating eyewitness testimony. So it's interesting that we've kind of forgotten about this case, I feel like. Whereas the Goblins, and I love the Hopkinsville Goblins, don't get me wrong, but the Goblins have kind of worked their way into the upper pantheon of modern cryptids. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're all over the place now. They're like the Fresno Nightcrawlers and maybe not quite as heavy as Mothman, but they're up there. So I think it's time we bring this guy kind of out into the fold. I think people need to know about these little dudes. What exactly to call them is another thing entirely. The book, Faces of the Visitors, lists them as the Hairy Attacker.
I do think that's kind of a cool name, but I think it would be easy to paint that as like a gross...
Something not so great.
Old man who like shows himself.
Hey!
Sexual. Or what do you call it when they're...
Like a flasher, maybe?
Yeah,
like
I'm the hairy attacker!
Gross old flasher. That's what I think of.
Well, so then I figured, why not just do it in Spanish? Because it was Venezuela, so they would have been speaking Spanish.
Yeah.
Which is Atacante Peludo.
Yeah, Peludo.
There's also the Caracas Dwarves. I've heard them referred to as that.
Okay.
So that's kind of cool. In Serbian, La Cave Napadak is also Harry Attacker. Japanese, Kemukujara no Ko Kekekisha.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah. And then French is Ataka Poilu.
Did you ask Virginia about that?
I did, yes. I actually consulted native speakers of Spanish, Serbian, and French. And
that's
then
awesome.
The Japanese was just based on my own knowledge of Japanese and
that's so cool.
A little bit of research. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. So I don't know what we call this thing. I think the Caracas Dwarves works really well, too. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have another name.
Ewoks. No, I'm kidding.
The Caracas Ewoks. El Enano Peludo, which I believe means hairy dwarves. Our artist friend Mike G, Art of the Morning Star, made us a really cool, unsolicited, just made it for us, episode cover for this episode. Has a really cool depiction of the dwarves on there. And for his description, it's El Enano Peludo, which I believe means the hairy dwarves. So
cool.
Yeah, maybe this could be our next like voting campaign. What do we call these things?
The next voting campaign.
Yeah.
Get ready to pick.
I'm going to stick with Caracas Dwarves for right now, just because I like it, and okay. That's the name of this episode. But I also think that Harry Attacker, maybe in Spanish.
Harry Attacker is cool. I didn't mean that it wasn't cool. It just, like, I don't think of aliens when I hear it.
It conjures not the best feelings. Atacante peludo. Atacante peludo. Kemukujara no koko keksha. Drakave napadak. All right. Well, what do you think about this case? Do you think this is legit? Do you think this is one that just got blown out of proportion? What are your thoughts?
Hell if I know, but it's really cool.
I think it is really cool. I would put it up there like almost on the level of Roswell.
Interesting.
Just because there's so much stuff, you know? There's no physical...
I mean, I was going to say there's no physical evidence of a crash or a site that specifically points to where we could have found, you know, left behind debris or left behind proof of... Mm-hmm. of an alien visit.
But you do have like medical records and police records.
Yeah.
That people were physically attacked.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's pretty interesting. Long list of sources that talk about this case. And one note that I read in one article was, you know, probably the reason we don't hear much about this is that during the major UFO flaps of the 50s and 60s, Americans were primarily writing about and reporting on incidences in the U.S. and Europe also, but not really looking so much at Latin America and other parts of the world. We know that there are tons and tons of sightings in the Soviet Union. A lot of writing has been done on that. I don't know if there are any really comprehensive books on UFO sightings in Latin America.
Yeah, let's not get into, you know, Spanish erasure.
Yeah. Well, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, we need to look into this because this is a really, really important case, both from a cryptozoological standpoint and a ufological standpoint. If we're going to place the Kentucky Goblins in the cryptid category, we have to do the same thing with these guys.
Yeah, that's true.
By definition, you know, almost point for point. So we will be talking more about these spicy little boys, these feisty little dwarf guys in the future. But I think this is a pretty good place to put a pin in this one. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't really have much to...
The point of this episode was to introduce the hairy goblin Caracas attackers and then also just kind of make the point that they should get more attention. Thank you for coming back to Hey Strangeness. We will be back pretty soon. Our next episode is on none other than...
Maybe.
The Texas Terror Dog.
Oh, are we finally going there?
Oh, yeah, we're doing it. Yeah.
Okay.
We're not talking Chupacabra. We're talking Texas Terror Dog.
Okay.
We're also making a unified push to really get the name of the Texas Terror Dog out there. There's going to be an article in Paranormality, which will coincide with some of our interviews on Strange Conversations. And I'm also reaching out to some very fantastic, nifty people in the cryptozoology field. So,
Yay.
Come back soon. Check out our Etsy store. We have two new designs up there for you, El Sanguacho and La Necia. Loch Ness Monster and Sasquatch. And
okay, bye.
Bye.